Hello, and welcome to this fifth episode of Season 5 of The Dark Mummy Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend, and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
We've been busy, Graham.
We really have. Aside from anything else, the FinCEN Files repercussions rumble on.
They do. And following our last episode, we've received some very positive feedback, along with some that's rather less so. And I think we ought to revisit the whole business again soon to address the newly emerging stories.
Yes, I agree. And we definitely should. But let's give it a week or two. Let things settle down. I don't think anyone's ready just yet for another long episode.
Oh, no, I'm not.
No, nor me.
It's a couple of weeks on from the Dark Money Conference and probably a good time to look back and draw out some reflections.
Oh, I agree with that, Ray. Yes.
Well, we sat down and challenged ourselves to review all our notes from the 3 days and pick out five particular themes we wanted to explore.
Yeah, frankly, we could have gone for 10 or 20, but if we had, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast until November.
And the constraint made us think quite carefully about what should make it into the selection.
So we're just briefly going to share these reflections, and if you find these spark your interest, we'll tell you afterwards about a way you can access all the conference content, the keynotes, the panel discussions, and so on.
And a few special sessions from the two of us.
Well, now, don't spoil it, Ray.
Sorry, Graham. But we should also add the selection of workshops as well, including the one we added post-conference, where I interviewed you with Simon Bowers of ICIJ and James Oliver, the producer of Panorama, about the FinCEN files.
Yes, all of that. But let's talk about that afterwards.
Righto. Reflection number one, then, is about technology.
Yes, and it's what we take from a number of discussions and insights into the role and capabilities of tech in the AFC space, the anti-financial crime space, across all the conference activities. It's this. Tech is probably the answer, but there are still some questions.
Well, I think the case for wide use of technology is unarguable, Graham. What are the questions?
For me, they are fundamental questions about what we're trying to get the tech to do. Largely, we seem to be getting tech to do the same job, deliver the same processes as we've had human beings doing.
And that's based on the fully supportable view that machines can undertake well-defined processes far more quickly and accurately than any person can.
Yes, it is, but this in itself shows, I think, our mistaken approach.
Which is what?
Which is that we don't trust the machines. We get the machines to deliver decisions for processes that we as humans have defined. We tell them exactly what to do and how to decide in any given situation. We then wait for their answer, and then we have people check it more often than not.
But there's no point in checking the machine as correctly done what we told it to do. We can rely on its ability to do that, surely. What we're really checking when we do this is that we gave it the right instructions in the first place.
I agree, right? And while you might do that at the start in your user acceptance testing, it's a complete waste of time in the production environment, and it wastes the time of valuable human resource. People could be doing way more valuable things.
Something Matthew Leaney said has stuck with me. It was picked up also in the conference reporting by AMLintelligence.com. Matthew said, for technology to work in financial crime, it needs to act as proof of something rather than as suggestion.
That's a great sentence, and yeah. I couldn't agree more. And Matthew goes on to stress the need for it to have transparency and explicability, and says, quotes, if not, it will be viewed as nothing more than useful when it could change the game.
And I think that's something we all need to reflect on. If we're not careful, we end up with lots of shiny tech that just helps us do the wrong things better.
So, the second reflection.
Well, it's one where I think we already had a view going in, Graham, but everything we heard at the conference strengthens it. It's that financial crime is a global operation that we can't defeat using simply national frameworks.
And many of our speakers were very well placed to comment on this. Paul Radu, who's the founder of the Organised Crime and Corruption Reporting Project, for instance, says repeatedly, it takes a network to fight a network.
And Oliver Bullough shared some insights from his research for the book Moneyland that underlined the point even further.
Yeah, that was the conference opener, so it really set the tone early on.
And Oliver came up with that fantastic example of crime opportunity theory in action by relating it to self-scanning services at supermarkets.
And for those of you who haven't come across crime opportunity theory before, it's well worth spending a few minutes reading up on it.
And if you want to hear Oliver's example, you can find out how at the end of this podcast. Number three then, Graham.
It's that we need to devote more time, more thinking, more training and discussion to why we do what we do.
AML and CTF can become very mechanical operations, can't they? It's very easy to become desensitised, like the person working in finance who gradually stops thinking of £1 million as a large sum of money.
That's exactly right. And we spend more and more time thinking about how we do things, which is important. But if we ignore the why, we can't be sure that the how is the right how, if you see what I mean.
It was a major theme of the conference, wasn't it? The tension between focus on process and focus on outcome.
Yeah, and for me, the conference crystallised my view that what's missing often is devoting enough time and space to properly consider why we are doing what we do, what crimes we are trying to prevent.
Our fourth observation is another tech-related one. It's that there is always a role for people, however good the machines become.
And speaking as a person, I find that quite reassuring, Ray.
Me too. We heard a number of speakers talking quite passionately about this, about how machines plus people are more than the sum of their parts.
Yes, if that relationship can be properly harnessed.
And as we observed earlier, we're not there yet. What is the role long-term for people, Graham?
I think it's that hard-to-define qualities of intuition, hunch, experience. We know, don't we, from our work with artificial intelligence data scientists, that we will often look at an entity, you or me, or a piece of information, and we'll know immediately that it's worth looking closer or deeper into it. But when they say why, we sometimes find that quite hard to explain.
Yeah, but often the challenge is to get through the chaff in order to spend time on those more interesting cases, and that's where the tech can play a role.
Or possibly roles. I think there will be tech that can usefully filter out the chaff, but also other systems that can helpfully augment focus entities, which may not entirely replace the investigation, but will be able to do a lot of the heavy lifting, and often in places the investigator finds hard to reach.
Like internet sites in non-Western scripts, for example.
Exactly right.
And so, the fifth and final one for now, the systems and structures care more about punishment of the bad guys than about the victims.
It's a strong statement, Ray, but we heard evidence of this again and again at the conference.
We did. And actually, this is one of the aspects where I felt the conference was really solution-focused.
Yeah, although the solutions aren't perhaps the ones we'd first come to.
No, quite. But there was a surprising unanimity between speakers who addressed this, right from the opening piece by Oliver Bullough, right through to the moving final address by Matthew Caruana Galizia.
And it's a very simple idea, and it is to prevent financial crime rather than simply detecting it.
But that's what so much of our work and that of our colleagues is about, isn't it?
Yes and no, Ray. We come in at the end of the crime and seek to stop people being able to freely spend the money they've earned criminally. By then, it's too late to prevent the predicate crimes because they have already happened.
But making it harder for criminals to launder the money makes committing the crimes in the first place less attractive, less viable, doesn't it?
It definitely does, which is exactly what crime opportunity theory is all about and why it's so important. But crime is so remunerative that it's hard to stop people continually trying to find new ways while we all play whack-a-mole.
So what are we saying?
If we make it impossible for criminals to conceal their acts, they will more rarely commit them.
How can we do that?
Transparency, Ray, it's been a hobby horse of ours for ages, but it's good to hear so many experts say the same thing. Open registries makes it impossible for people to conceal their ownership of legal structures. Few criminals will do in broad daylight what they would happily do under the cover of darkness in secret.
But Graham, privacy!
It's a trade-off, isn't it, Ray? Kleptocracies cannot exist where there is global transparency, nor can bribery or corruption or human rights abuses and a host of other nastiness. We're not talking about Brian next door being able to see your bank balance. After all, just about proper authorities being able to see who exactly owns corporate and legal structures.
Nonetheless, there are huge privacy lobbies who on principle oppose this sort of thing.
There are, Ray, but it takes a special kind of empathy deficit, doesn't it, to believe that your ability to conceal and profit from activities you wouldn't want people to know about somehow trumps the need to address the terrible human rights abuses and violations that are happening in the world. We need transparency lobbies who can shout louder.
I think we're getting there.
Me too, and I can't think of a better note to end on.
So we've skimmed the surface of the conference, but there's so much in there that rewards an hour or two of viewing.
Yeah, we recorded everything and we've kept it on the platform. So if you have a conference ticket already, you're able to go back and see the bits you've missed or want to see again for the next 12 months.
Until the next conference, in fact.
Well, yeah, that's the idea.
But if you weren't able to attend the conference, it's not too late.
No, yippee. With our partners FSCon, we're offering post-conference tickets at a massively reduced rate of £100 plus VAT.
You'll get all the conference content, but minus the ability to network and contribute questions for the live sessions, hence the reduction in price over the actual conference tickets.
How do people buy tickets then, Ray?
We've put a link on the front page of our website, thedarkmoneyfiles.com, which will take you straight to the booking form.
And by doing so, you'll be making a direct contribution to the fight against financial crime. For every ticket that's bought, we will be donating £25 to the Daphne Caruana Galizia Foundation.
And if that name means nothing to you, then Google it, and you'll see why we wanted to support the foundation set up by her family in her name.
So that was the conference. Worth doing, I think.
Oh, yes. Preparing for it has been a dominating feature of our lives for so long, I feel a bit lost now that it's over.
I know how you feel.
So what's next for our listeners, Graham?
Ray, there have been developments in the world of unexplained wealth orders, which I know are UK-based, but I think there's learning for all of us and are worth looking at, particularly in the light of us mentioning crime opportunity theory. Mm. We can blend the topical with the more fundamental for a very interesting conversation, I think.
I'm looking forward to it. ¶¶